Hi, ladies and gents, fellow Celtic fans. Welcome to the third Trinity Thames podcast, the one we are calling joyful and triumphant, since that's the general mood amongst Celtic supporters, but it seems only Celtic supporters at the moment. Guys, good weekend, safe to say. Yes. I think we all enjoyed it the same way.
Great weekend.
Dramatic. I wouldn't recommend it, but all's well, ends well.
That's it, correct.
Yeah, I mean, we knew they were going to fight tooth and nail for this one, and they did. And I think, you know, I wouldn't have wanted it any other way, to be fair. I think the way we won it in the end was in a dramatic fashion, but it's soul-destroying to lose a penalty shootout like that in a cup final, and you couldn't have scripted it any better.
Definitely not. So what was your take on the game, Joe? How did you think it went?
That's a hell of a question. Firstly, we were very, very, very poor. We played for about 15 minutes or so. During that 15 minutes, we scored two goals. If we'd got a third, it would have been much easier and more like the script that we were expecting, but it wasn't to be. Full credit to the players for battling back at the start of the second half. And with each passing hour, with each passing day, the four lads had a dream shot is becoming more iconic. How Carter Vickers stood up to them is, that's the stuff of legend. In 20, 30 years' time, folk will be talking about that. I think that was 48 minutes, and 10, 11, 12 minutes later, we're leading 2-1 and rubbing our hands and saying, how many? But there was something just missing from Celtic. I'm not quite sure what. Part theory is that we only had four midfielders in the squad, and we know Hatate's hot and cold, and Arnie Engels isn't quite on it just now. So that cuts down our midfield options. It was playing with fire a little bit when we signed Luke McCowan so late. Luke McCowan should have been in early in the transfer window. He wouldn't have been cup-tied at Dundee, and he'd have been on pretty rapid. He could have been a half-time substitute if he was in the squad. So there was a few flaws, but these guys, they love winning. It's no cliche, but every cup final is treated as if it's their first. Whether it's a love of winning or a fear of losing, they're on it 100%. And at halftime, when they came off, they must have had a wee look around and says, don't fancy this, I don't like it. Came out for the second half, said they played well for 15, 20 minutes. There was no great teamwork. Carter Vickers held things well at the back. Kuhn had flashes of play. Maeda was Maeda. And we got there. So it'd be very interesting, Brendan Rodgers off-the-record analysis. He didn't go in deeply on the match when he was speaking after the match, but it was a pretty poor performance. But as the song says, what the hell do we care? Because we won our 119th trophy, as dramatic an hour and a half, two, pushing 3 hours by the time it finished, as you'll find. I never, ever, ever want to live through anything like that again. I thought the Aberdeen semi-final was fairly dramatic. I didn't think I'd be reliving that a few months later with a trophy at stake or a trophy going across the city. So very grateful and enjoyed it thoroughly afterwards. But it'll be interesting to see how Brendan Rodgers deals with it. I think with a glut of fixtures coming up, there's got to be strong rotation. I don't think it would have been his plan to field the same team against Dinamo Zagreb as in the cup final, but clearly he felt that those players were better suited than bringing others in. I thought Engels would have started because ahead of Bernardo, simply for the fact that they're the sort of third choice midfielders, and that freshens it up. And I thought Valley would be in for Taylor on the same train of thought. But he stuck with the team that got the point in Zagreb. They lifted the trophy, and we'll live, learn. And I'll pass over to Eric for his take on Sunday.
Well, yeah, I'd echo what Joe was saying there. I think, you know, it was a sequence of games that was always going to be tough. You know, and this culminating in the cup final as well. And like, I was a bag of nerves going into the the game on Sunday. And I don't know, I suppose I had a bit of a bad feeling about the game in a way, because there was a lot at stake. I knew Rangers would come out fighting. I knew that they would do their utmost to try and stop us from getting that trophy. And if I was as nervous as I was, you know, as I was, there had to be an element of nervousness for the players too. I mean, they knew, look, they're professionals, obviously, but they knew there was a lot at stake as well. And you could see that reflected in their performance in the first half. They had all the possession in the world, but they just didn't seem to be able to convert that into goals. And the way that we conceded towards the end of the first half, you know, that was just calamitous. It was just a bad pass from Taylor, and then they broke, and Schmeichel did all he could in that instance. But, you know, I was a bit downhearted when they went in at halftime at 1-0 down, and I thought to myself, you know, that the Ibrox side, you know, would they have another goal in the second half? I thought we'd come out all guns blazing. I knew Brendan Rodgers would have the team talk at halftime, and he rallied the troops, and that was the way it went in the second half. You know, Taylor redeemed himself somewhat, obviously with the aid of a very handy deflection. But Maeda's goal, oh, that was a piece of class. You know, the way he broke out of broke ahead of the Ibrox defence, lifted it over the keeper, you know, or lifted it over the defence, and then just slotted it away the way he did. And I suppose, you know, Maeda, I think it was yourself, James, that said he had the ability to be a cult player at Celtic, but he was just missing that element from his game where his final ball and sometimes his finishing left a lot to be desired. Well, you couldn't question his finishing on Sunday. That was a really, really good finish. But then for him to step up at the end of the penalty shootout with all of that resting on his shoulders, he was as cold as ice. He's a cool customer. He's well able to handle those pressure situations. And I think, you know, I alluded to it in my article yesterday. Rodgers obviously felt that too. He obviously felt that he was the ideal man to slot away that final penalty. And he did it. He did it with aplomb. And whether, you know, he's ever going to amongst that player that ends up having the perfect finish or the perfect final ball, because we all complain sometimes about the way he crosses the ball or he delivers the ball into the box when he's on the wing. He is now a cult hero because he has... You know, he is the guy who scored that goal in the game. He is the guy who scored that final penalty, and he'll go down as a cult hero with Celtic, I think, for the rest of his days. He's in the history books now at Celtic, and I'm delighted for him because I really like him as a player, and I really, really think that he just contributes so much to the team. He contributes so much to the squad. He's a phenomenal guy, and I couldn't be happier for him, to be honest. And I couldn't have wished for it to end any better than that. So that's my take on it.
I think I would echo every one of those sentiments about Maeda. I agree with what Joe said and what you said yourself. To me, the Celtic's performance in the game lasted for 20 minutes after the start of the second half. That's when the real Celtic showed up. And we went from being one behind to being one in front in that spell. And had we kept that pace and maintained that kind of quality, I think we'd have been out of sight long before the finish, long before it, because they were out on their feet, and I don't know how we let them back into the game, to be honest. There was an article online the other day, and I won't mention the writer and I won't mention the website, but the suggestion was that Clement had tactically outclassed Rodgers, but I didn't see that. And I still don't see it. And I've watched the game a few times now. And I don't see it at all. What I see is I see a handful of individual mistakes that cost us and a team performance that didn't quite hit the heights that we expected and we know we're capable of. Let me put it this way. If Greg Taylor just takes an extra second before he passes that ball for the first goal, the whole game's different and we probably win it comfortably. That's just one of those things. One of those bad mistake, and we made another bad mistake to concede so late at the end of the game when we should just have tightened up and kept the heads. But, you know, all's well that ends well. I'm glad you guys have talked about Maeda, because I was going to ask you about individual performances. His obviously stands out. Carter Vickers, as you said, Joe, that tackle is unbelievable. His piece of last-ditch defending is incredible. But are those your two like standout Celtic players on the day, or was there somebody else you thought deserved?
Nicholas Cruden for his goal. That was a fantastic piece of skill. He almost got a goal after 5-10 minutes when he cut in from the right wing, skinned him, but he came in at too tight an angle. But beyond that, it's hard to pick players out. Kyogo never got a sniff at things. The central defenders was switched. That tells you something. And I think Rodgers could have invented an injury or a small knock.
But what did you think of that? What did you think of the manager's rationale for doing that?
It's funny because now and then, it's not quite under the bus, but now and then Rodgers will just say something. I mean, in pre-season, I think he was asked about home and Lowell, and he sort of hinted towards attitude or something. So now and then he'll just say something rather than defending and covering his players, which every manager does all the time. But it was strange what he mentioned, and we'll see what the team sheet, I nearly swore there, what the team sheet is on Sunday. There's a tongue twister. It'll be very interesting whether Scale starts or whether he restores Trusty. But it was a strange change. Taylor, full marks to him for recovering and getting the shot away. Sometimes it just doesn't go your way. But every player, we know we're 100% effort from them. But Hitati had ups and downs, more downs than ups. Bernardo was there or thereabouts, and that put a big onus on McGregor. He wasn't quite his usual self. So, apart from Maeda and Carter Vickers, there wasn't many players that brought their A game. Coon was quite close.
Do you think that the occasion got to Trusty?
I don't think so. He's played in Champions League games. He's played away to Dortmund and Atalanta. There's a different dynamic. It's extra charge and things, but he's a fairly experienced. He's not in too many games, but he's been at Arsenal. He played last season in the EPL. He's played this season in the Champions League. He's been in the American international squad without playing too many games, so it shouldn't really have got to him. But there was only two real players. Kasper Schmeichel did. It was good, and his penalty save, that'll live forever. Down at the same corner as Joe Hart saved his penalty in the Aberdeen match. I don't think any players will particularly look back in that and say that was fantastic, but all that counts is they found a way to win, and they seem to be throwing it away. I mean, the parallels with that Aberdeen game is ridiculous, but they seem really to find ways to throw it away and keep finding ways to win it. So their spirit, character, all that is unquestionable, but we get them again. Yeah. Over 2 weeks' time, it'll be incredibly interesting at Ibrox. But it was about picking up winners' medals, and yep, they did it. And that's the one bit of class was Maeda's goal. Coon's not far behind. And when it came to penalties, I mean, at this time last year or 2 years ago, if we get a penalty in an SPFL match, we were holding our hands in our head and saying, whose turn is it? What are they going to do? But that's us being to two shootouts. And
yeah,
I think Joe Hart's the only player that's missed.
Hart's the only player to miss one, yeah.
The penalties are fantastic. And
yeah,
there must be something to it about practicing it. Nothing compares to a hostile crowd at Hampden popping them in against Super Jack Butland. But they guys held their nerve. There was no doubt about any of them. Sometimes you get one that will sneak in, the keeper dies the wrong way. But they were all well placed, well executed. So I hope it's a long time before I see Celtic another penalty shootout. But if those guys are involved again, I think we've got a moderate degree of confidence when it goes to a penalty shootout. But I suspect, Eric, can you find anyone that did themselves justice?
There is no standout, really. And I mean, if you were to look at, you know, ratings, most players were 6 to 6.5. You know, if they were anything above that, that would be being generous. However, I would kind of think that Kasper Schmeichel for his save in the penalty shootout. And look, I suppose he did everything he could do in terms of the way he played between the sticks during the game, and there wasn't a whole pile. I thought the way that Diamande's shot trickled over the line, that maybe he could have done a bit better with that. But I think when he went, when it went to the penalty shootout, I was confident that Schmeichel had a save in him somewhere in there, you know. So I was actually confident going into the shootout. And look, everybody hates shootouts at the end of the day, but I was confident going into the shootout that Schmeichel would have a save in his locker. And it transpired he did. And that was, you know, he'll go down for that save. I mean, that's ultimately his save was what put us in the put us on the platform to be able to go on and win it. So, but there wasn't really any standouts. And I think outside of that, the Hatate conundrum continues. You know, do we give him a break? Do we rest him, you know, for the upcoming fixtures? Is he going to find his form again? But it just, we're talking how many games now, 4 or 5, where we have seen, other than that well-taken goal at Aberdeen, he's been posted absent, you know, and making lots of basic errors, silly passes, balls going into areas where there's nobody on the end of them. Just isn't like him, you know. I don't know where his confidence has gone from the way he started the season to where he is now, but he needs to turn it around, you know. What do you guys think?
Yep, it's a strange one. Being a creative player, you've got to try things and they won't all come off, but the percentages that are coming off aren't enough, and he's leaving the team short a few times when his passes are quite easily cut out. It's strange. I mean, possibly looking back, he's maybe in the longest run of consecutive matches or involvement that he's ever had at Celtic. Last season, there was a couple of long breaks, but his fitness seems fine. I mean, he played 2 hours and got up and popped away the Celtic's fourth penalty. But some reason, he's just a little bit off it. That's up to manager to manage. That's what he gets paid the good money for. We've got, with the League Cup finish, McCowan is fully available. So we've got 5 good quality midfielders for 3 places. And if someone's a little bit off the boil, then someone else gets a bit more game time. And it's up to the guy that's off the boil to work his way back into this side. But over the next, there's tons of games coming up, 8 league matches in less than a month. There's got to be serious rotation. They'll all benefit from getting that rotation instead of McGregor and 2 others.
Absolutely.
That's my tuppence worth.
Yeah, no, the sequence of games coming up, I think McCowan should get an extended run as well, you know, especially, as you said, now since the League Cup final is out of the way, it is a good time to get him in and involved a bit more, because he does contribute a lot when it comes to the league games. He's always been solid. So I think he should get an extended run now and maybe give Atate a rest. Maybe, I mean, Rodgers was harsh in his criticism of Trusty, but he's never given any, you know, he's never given any criticism to Hatate, you know.
He did though last season. He was pretty critical.
He did last season. That's the thing, he was kind of harsh on him last season, and he wasn't giving him an extended run in the squad last season, you know. And and there was, okay, he had injuries, but he's just not on it at the moment. And I think Rodgers has to just sit up and take note of that.
I mean, we've left out Engels for a couple of games. I won't say it's because of the criticism he's been getting or whatever, or the pressure he's been under, but sometimes it does benefit a player who's under the spotlight to take him out of the spotlight for a wee while and give somebody else a chance. And then, you know, I mean, Hatate's the kind of guy you would want on the bench, put it that way. In terms of being an impact substitute, you want guys like that. Yeah. To be able to come off the bench late in the game and win you the match. But right now, you're right, he's not getting it done on a week-to-week basis. So I think in the next couple of weeks, you'll see Rodgers take him out the front line for his own good, if for nothing else.
Getting rested or dropped isn't anything drastic. It means you're on the bench and you can go on after 60, 70 minutes, and you'll soon find a starting place again. It's just squad management and managing minutes, all that sort of stuff. But it's nothing to do with fitness. It's all for him. So the manager sees that in the matches at Lennox Town, and We'll trust them to come up with the goods at Dundee United on Sunday.
Well, I put it this way, guys. Would you be confident with Hitachi starting at Ibrox in a few weeks?
Yes, very.
You will?
I'm always confident that Hitachi's got that wee moment of magic in his game. But I wouldn't be disappointed if he was left out. I would be confident if he plays, but I wouldn't be disappointed to see him benched for a couple of games.
There's a lot of football before then. Four or five matches before Ibrox, so it's game by game. Is it St Johnstone in the 29th? So it'll be who's injured, who's not. Fortunately, our luck with injuries seems to continue. Whoever's fit, whoever's in form, they'll be the runners for that. And again, at Ibrox, the 2nd of January, five subs will be used and five subs will be expected to make an impact on the game. It will not be any lowering of standards. It will be variation, freshen things up, fresh options. So,
there's also the chance that he could redeem himself in this period as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It could pop in a couple of goals at Dundee United on Sunday and nobody be in any way surprised, whether that's starting the match or coming off the bench. So the manager knows his makeup best, and I don't think anyone doubts that the manager knows how to get the best out of Hitachi, and we'll definitely see that.
Correct. Right, well, guys, we best move on to the reaction to the game. After every one of these games, when we've beaten them, there is always something. It seems like there's always an excuse, so there's always a straw to clutch tear, there's always some mad fantasy that they tell themselves about the gap not existing or whatever it is. I said in an article the other day that if we were talking about two fighters here and one had won four bouts by knockout, another one on points, and had split the decision on the sixth one, most commentators would be telling his opponent, don't get back in the ring with this guy. But we keep on hearing that next time will be the time. And Jack Bowen's in the papers today saying, Ibrox will be, we're close to getting a result for the manager. Wonderful. They can keep it up. But the mainstream media reaction has been hysterical. Hysterical. I don't think I've ever seen it this bad. And they all want to focus on one decision.
That penalty decision.
One, not as straightforward as they're making it out to be. Or, let me try that again. A much more straightforward decision than they're making it out to be. And a gross misrepresentation, I think, of what actually happened on the pitch. Joe, what do you think? What is going on? Is this the craziest reaction you've seen from the mainstream media?
It's up there. You think this is the most extreme, but if you go back over various others, there's a fairly similar pattern. But the complete refusal to acknowledge that there might be a little bit of doubt in their argument is incredible. We've heard on the Willie Collins show with his good friend Gordon Duncan, we've heard audio of lots of incidents. So if they want to release the audio of that incident, that should clear a lot up. We're all fairly convinced that, knowing John Beaton as we do, that the minute Liam Scales got off the ground and raised his foot, John Beaton saw the opportunity to give them a free kick. Better still, book Liam Scales.
Exactly what happened.
If only he had held on a few seconds more, he could still have blown for the free kick. But if he'd held on a few seconds more, we're all assuming that the whistle went early. We'll find out if they ever released the audio. And we'll also hear the conversation, whether Beaton says free kick or whether he says handball. Not handball, pulling the shot. So that could come out in the audio. But there's just a complete blanket refusal to accept that there's a possibility that the whistle went early for the physical contact, not for the shot pull. So it's fantastic. Led by Bobby Madden, he didn't wait very long. That was picked on across the board. Neil McCann followed it up, and Tom, Dick and Harry have been on it ever since. And
Mike McCurry was the latest tonight.
Yes. But when Mike McCurry and Bobby Madden are standing up your argument, you don't really have much of an argument. If you brought in some pet referee from England, somebody like Jeff Winter, who we all know about, but if they got some Belgian, French, Spanish, I'm sure they would say, I would need to listen to the audio. We need to find out what the free kick was for, but it's been completely ruled out, the possibility that a free kick was awarded for the foul, the kick by Scales on Czerny. And a decent parallel is the 2023 Scottish Cup semi-final, when everyone stopped for a free kick when Matt O'Reilly was fouled from behind. Everyone expected Don Robertson to blow for a free kick. The referee didn't give the right decision. Dyson Maeda was on it, and seconds later, the ball's in the back of the net. So, in that instance, Don Robertson didn't want to give Celtic the free kick for the foul on O'Reilly. About four or five of their players stopped. Maeda moved, and Jota moved, and that was it. And in this case, John Beaton couldn't wait to give a free kick with the bonus of the yellow card, and it backfired on them again. So, the fallout, the meltdowns, Neil McCann, Chris Boyd, whoever you want, some of the fan media stuff has been incredible. They won't say conspiracy, they won't say cheating, but they'll dance all the way around it, and they'll read out selective comments on it, and all sorts. It's hilarious. When they said we were paranoid, we concluded that we weren't paranoid enough, because things came out. But we'll listen out for the audio. Again, Gordon Duncan, good friend of the SFA, Willie Collins' bestie, he was dropping a few hints on Radio Clyde last night. He seemed to suggest that audio will be available and they'll react it back. I would love to... But while they're releasing this audio, can they release the audio from back in September for the Kyogo goal that was disallowed and the justification was 20 lines? So let's get it. It should just be part and parcel of it. We were told that Willie Collins, a new broom, Michael Nicholson thinks it's fantastic. Nicholson stands by his laptop waiting to see the latest Willie Collins show on YouTube and thinks that solved all the problems. It's transparency. So let's hear the audio and see what direction the argument takes from that. But it is incredible, A, that there's no consideration whatsoever for a possibility, and B, the absolute bonkers, over-the-top reaction to it. But we're going on now for 48 hours constant. There's no avoiding it.
Yeah, completely.
When it runs itself out, I don't see it running out tomorrow. For those watching, this is Tuesday evening, more than 2 days on for the game. I dare say when this video goes up on Wednesday, they'll still be foaming at the mouth on it. But
Not quite, because all told, there is some kind of event happening at Hampden tomorrow, and Mulroney's going to be there, and Maxwell's going to be there, and apparently they're going to get quizzed about this tomorrow. So we will know by the time people see this, I think, what has actually happened. I think a lot of our finer journalists are going to have some egg on their face. I mean, Tom English is the classic example of someone who is refusing to consider that there might just be a simple explanation for this. You know, he's talking about it being inexplicable. Well, it's not really inexplicable if there's a simple alternative explanation, which he doesn't want to consider. I don't know. That's inexplicable to me. What about you, Eric? What do you think?
Well, nobody wants to consider that, because that's just going to make everybody look like fools. If there's a simple explanation for it, and if, as we've discussed, you know, the audio states that there was a, you know, beaten blue for a free kick prior to the incident, then it's just going to make everybody look foolish. And it's kind of like just our Joe saying, you know, that Willie Collum is new broom sweeps clean. And it kind of, I think of the old Irish joke, you know, of the woman saying, I've had this brush for 20 years now. It's had five heads and four sticks. That's the Scottish referee. It never changed, you know. It's just the same old thing, you know, and it's never going to change. But I mean, it's just, they had to find something at the end of the day to start crowing about. I mean, and this is just, it's hysterical, the level that they're going to in the media about this. And it is like if the audio, the look, I mean, if the SFA have nothing to hide, they'll release the audio will explain everything. And then what's going to happen? It'll just be a case of, oh yeah, that didn't happen. They'll ignore it. They'll move on and they won't talk about it anymore, but they'll keep talking about it until such time as the audio is released and it shows that it was just exactly what we think. And that's pretty much what I think, that Beaton was just a bit over anxious.
There's also plan B, the ridiculous trip by Nicholas Kuhn. Andy crossed him. He fell to the ground. I suspect that he was trying to fill Kuhn rather than the other way around. Kuhn had laid the ball off to Engels. He was waiting in the pass coming back. But digging that up, and then plan C is Kasper Schmeichel, his encroachment at the penalties.
It's like when we've brought up legitimate issues and where we've been hard done by, and we've been called paranoid freaks, and we've been called every name under the sun. And Tom English is a great man, you know, to lead that whole charge whenever we call foul, you know, when we cry foul. And there have been many instances where we've cried foul legitimately. We've had legitimate concerns. We had legitimate concerns in the game against Hearts. We had legitimate concerns in the game back in 2018 at Ibrox where you know, Alfredo Morelos was allowed to run amok. We don't go into these situations without having legitimate concerns. Yet we're labeled paranoid and we're labeled, you know, that we're sore losers and if we have lost the game as a result of it. But then you have an incident like this where it's a thing of nothing. And it suits them to go nuts about it. And it's the total opposite to when we actually highlight instances like what happened at Tynecastle last season. You know what I mean? Our concerns were legitimate. This is a thing of nothing, and it's going to end up being a thing of nothing. And that's why it looks so foolish and it makes them look so stupid.
I mean, we have the biggest legitimate concern of all of them, and that John Beaton was ever allowed to referee this game in the first place. And I said before the game, I don't care if he has the perfect game. I don't care if he gets every major decision right. And in my opinion, he got most of the major decisions right, including this one. But he shouldn't be near the game. Everyone knows that John Beaton is an Ibrox fan. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who are these people trying to kid? That they're the ones with the legitimate concern. We're the ones with the legitimate concern. And we've had it right from the start, from the minute his name was announced as being the senior official. That's just bonkers to me.
There was no major decisions that he gave against us, but there was constant free kicks when we were in possession. Bringing free kicks back. There was one in extra time that was pinged through to Maeda to run onto. It had shades of Lee Griffiths in the 2014 League Cup semi-final. Mm-hmm. We were 2-0 up. Balogun should have been sent off. He'd been booked in the first half. Beaton was reluctant to book him. He had a very nasty tackle foul on Hitati's ankle at the start of the second half. And then to even things up, eight bookings in all, that looks as if Beaton really had it in for them. Six of them were after the 90th minute. So once we went into stoppage time and regulation time, he started bringing out the yellow cards and continued that through the extra time. I suspect the extra time was 10, 11, maybe 12 minutes of football in the extra time. Barely get started. Players cramp, players injury. I think we get 3 minutes added on at the end of the first half of extra time, 1 minute at the end of the second half, and then that's us. Here we go, lads, 50-50. Cross your fingers. So yeah. There was nothing major. It was similar to the game at Ibrox in April, but some of the decisions that went against Celtic in that match were ridiculous. The free kicks that were constantly being given against Celtic, and that's a pattern that continued. Nothing major, but they do influence the game. They do slow us down. It loses time, and other teams are wise to it. The slightest contact, fall over. It's been and gone, but there's another game in a couple of weeks' time. I suspect David Dickinson might be the man for that. He's got the Celtic game on Sunday. It's quite a slight on the other referees on the rota that Beaton has been given 3 out of 5 matches this season.
It was
a VAR for one of the others. So whether it's Willie Collum or Crawford Allen, John Beaton is a blue-eyed boy at the SFA, and it's going to be a little while. I don't know if he'll get another one this season. So there's a game coming up in January. There'll be 2 more league matches and possibly a Scottish Cup tie. Willie Collum really needs to start getting other folk involved in that. But their problem, they created this. And Willie, if you're looking in, top tip, there is life beyond Lanarkshire and Glasgow. There must be some referees out there. There'll be some guys in Edinburgh that should be getting encouraged. And if John Beaton's such a fanatical referee, with a great love of the game, give him the Hearts Hibs games, give him Dundee and Dundee United. Let the guys from Glasgow and Lanarkshire visit the East Coast, and the guys from the East Coast can come and visit the West Coast. And things might be a little less chaotic, but I won't hold my breath on it. It's same old, same old. Eric described them as a nodding dog. They're following instructions. Hugh Dallas is still the strongest figure in Scottish football. Everyone in Lanarkshire owes their career to Hugh Dallas, and they take note of that.
Having seen McCurry, the latest name to get his 2 bobs worth, and I wouldn't be surprised if Hugh Dallas was next. They draft him in sometime tomorrow to tell us why it was definitely a penalty.
Yeah, but it goes back to Joe's point on Willie Collum. And I remember his initial interview when he took the role. I did an article on it at the time, and it was a complete, when the issue of allegiances came up, it was a complete exercise in obfuscation, skirting the issue. He just could not give a straight answer. You know, he started talking about, these are honest guys, they can't single them out for this kind of, they're going out there to do a job with the best intentions, all this kind of stuff. But when he was asked the allegiance question, it was just skirt the issue. He could not give a straight answer. A simple yes or no answer. He couldn't give it. And it was like, he was almost scripted for the interview, and he was almost, again, told what to say or told what not to say. And he just avoided the issue completely. He gave no straight answers on it. And that's the problem. There is no straight answer when it comes to allegiances in the game in Scotland. And you're not getting it from the SFA. You're not getting it from the head of referees. And you're just not going to get it. And that's the elephant in the room. And it's going to continue to be the elephant in the room for as long as it goes on. Unless there's a major change at the head of the SFA. And there's a major change at the head of refereeing. And a new batch of refs are brought in. But I just don't see it happening.
There's another factor in this. There is no interest, there's no appetite from the clubs. Aberdeen and Aberdeen fans will moan about referees coming from Glasgow to do games at Pittodrie. And we know Michael Nicholson is on mute. You won't get a peep out of him until the next AGM. If there's some absolutely ridiculous decisions, they'll bring out the disappointed statement, the template, tell us how disappointed they are, surprised and disappointed. But it needs to come from the clubs, and sadly, there is no appetite. Surely Hearts and Hibs want referees from Edinburgh to be involved, to be in the mix. But again, when they're playing us or them in any major match, the chances are the referee will come from Glasgow or from Lanarkshire. So everyone's just quite happy with it. They probably quite like the controversy.
It's lasting this long, so they must be happy with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, when Collum was asked the question, he couldn't give a straight answer. I mean, this is a simple yes or no answer, and he made out that it was very difficult to find to find good referees or referees who were, able to referee these kinds of games. I mean, if every other football association can do it, and every other football association can make a referee declare his allegiances, why can't the SFA do it?
I mean, that's the elephant in the room. That's the real question that none of them want to answer. None of them even want to discuss it. And I've heard, I've been on Spears a couple of times and discussing this, and some of the other guests have put the question to, other journalists or whatever, and said, why are we the only major European league which doesn't have this?
We
can't call the integrity of referees into account. We cannot question their integrity and their honesty. Well, you're not questioning their integrity and their honesty. It's the same freaking standard that every other league has, and we don't have it. And nobody's ever put these people on the spot and got a straight answer as to why we can't have it and shouldn't have it, and why we should be the only league, the outlier league, that doesn't. And that's just such nonsense.
Why can't we have professional refs? What is stopping us from having a professional?
The SFA will say they can't afford professional refs. We're too small a league. We can't afford professional referees.
The SFA have created three full-time VAR posts in the last 2 years. So if they fancy it, I mean, those VAR posts are just a thank you to referees. Well, it was created initially to suit Andrew Dallas, who had a sore leg and couldn't continue any longer. And then they brought in Greg Aitken as well.
That's right.
And now we rely on Alan Muir. I mean, what were these posts advertised? I suspect not. But they were able to find the funds for three at full-time VAR. And then they'll say, but a lot of the referees are getting great, they've got good jobs, they're mainstream jobs, they're professionals, they're all good. That's great. Well, just start training younger referees. If you're offering a salary of £60,000 to £70,000 and the prospect of European travel, and you get very well rewarded for taking European matches, I reckon you'll find some folk that will come through the ranks and be pretty good at it. There's an incredible wastage of young footballers, especially at our club. Some of them could become referees. They've got an interest in the game, they've got a knowledge of the game. And anyone at Celtic, send them over to the East Coast and they can learn their games there. And guys that don't make it at Dundee United, Dundee Hearts, Hibs, get them involved over here, and eventually you'll find competent referees. And a salary of £60,000 to £65,000 ought to be affordable. Put expenses on top of that, European travel, and you'll find some decent guys, rather than the professionals, the lawyers and accountants that do it as a very lucrative sideline. But again, no appetite. Just keep on doing things the way we've always done them, and who cares for the consequences?
But I mean, it's not even
trying to imagine Chris Boyd's reaction the first time an ex-Celtic Academy player turned referee gave a decision against us that he didn't like. It would almost be worth paying for the guy's courses myself just to see his face.
They don't get near our games. They do games in the East Coast. Somebody that's been a Celtic supporter, went through the academy for 8 years, gets released at 18 or 19, get trained to be a referee, and their matches are all on the East Coast. That's a decent option for those guys. They can get 2 or 3 years training at it to see if they're up to it. They'll know themselves if they're not up to it, and they'll need to pursue other careers. But if there's any vision or any ambition to do it, they'd try it. But we'll just continue. Look to see some good guy for Bells Hill or Wishaw or Motherwell. See if they're up to the job. And the same argument we had 10 years ago, and I suspect in 10 years' time it won't be much different.
Yeah, man, it goes back to the statistic that, you know, we haven't had a referee at a major tournament or a major final since 2016. You know, in Colin, he was
the one. That's a pretty big indictment, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, that just speaks volumes to the standard of refereeing there is in Scotland, that nobody has been selected to go to a major final since 2016. That's now coming up on 9 years ago, you know, so the rest of my case.
That's all right. No, that's good. Right, so that we've covered the reaction. Let's have a little chat about the consequences, because the consequences of this are quite substantial. We've now overtaken them in the trophy count, allegedly. Well, the way we've been putting it, guys, is that we've buried the survival lie and the reason for it. And now what we have to do, of course, is win the league and go 2 ahead of the lie, and the Scottish Cup and go 3 ahead of the lie, and start building momentum and just put it 6 feet under the ground and never have it mentioned again. But of course, there are other considerations. They now have to get the decorators in to remove all those fancy slogans and that they've got painted all over the stadium, which are now meaningless rubbish. There are big implications for their club, and in particular, the future of their manager. We'll start with that. Who is surprised to see him still in a job today? Joe, what about you?
I'll let Eric get first go at it. I've had the first go at the last couple of questions. So Eric can come in first and then I'll follow up if he leaves anything out.
I am surprised. I wouldn't have been surprised if they'd taken a hammering in the cup final. But I think we all knew it was never going to be that straightforward in the cup final. It was never going to be that easy. They did put up a decent fight in the game and they took it to the wire. And I think that is what's given him a stay of execution. But I would say that's what it is. It's a stay of execution. His next big test is the game at Ibrox. Yeah. And if he fails in that test, I think he'll be gone. I think they'll make the decision there and then, and next day, possibly the day after, he'll be gone from his role as the manager. So he's been given a stay of execution to the game. Obviously, if he drops points between now and then and the gap widens, it's going to make the decision much easier for the Ibrox board. But I'm not shocked. I am delighted that the fans are backing him now, because obviously they're delighted with the performance midweek against Andrew Spurs.
Yeah.
And now they're delighted with the spirit, you know, that they showed in the cup final. So, which really, really works in our favor, you know? So, no, I think in the overall scheme of things, I'm not surprised now because of what happened midweek and what happened in the cup final. They showed a bit of fighting spirit, and you know they love fighting spirit over at Ibrox. So, even if it leads to nothing, which it inevitably doesn't, or it inevitably does lead to nothing. So, yeah, long may it continue. He is another one of those gifts that keeps on giving, you know, at Ibrox. So if he stays there, I won't complain. And I don't think Joe will either. What do you think, Joe?
No, there's no great surprise that he's remained. Finances are utterly grim. The new CEO, he's the man with responsibility. There's going to be severe austerity in January. Well, the more diluted, they're talking about who they can sign and who can bring in. And we're only two or three players away.
And that's just in the mainstream media.
Yep. And if we can get somebody to sign Dessers and get somebody to sign Kieran Dowell, that'll free up wages and all that nonsense. But
Joe, did you see the reaction from Tavernier when Dessers was being brought on against Tottenham?
Yeah.
I mean, that was phenomenal. That really, really tells you about the spirit in that squad, doesn't it?
Yeah. His after-match comments on Sunday, that seemed to be a dig as well, when he was talking about the players who had the courage to step up, and Dessers obviously didn't fancy it. Yep. There's obviously splits in the dressing room. There's obviously wee factions, and Dessers is probably the loneliest guy at Ibrox right now.
Right. He's a lonely guy.
I'm surprised to see that there's another transfer story about him today.
He's a lonely guy with a long-term lucrative contract.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Clement is living game by game. If they fall any further behind Celtic before January 2nd, they might not make it to then. January 2nd, there's going to be so much expectation on him. And we know, Taff told us in his programme notes a few years ago that when the expectations are there, it's just unfair to expect them to deal with the expectations. So, as Eric says, it's a stay of execution. There's no long-term strategy. They're kidding themselves on that things are starting to fall into place. And Hadji, Danilo and Igamani, it's a fresh start and things are going to fall. There's going to be massive cost-cutting. They're going to have very little funds. They might get a EPL loan player in towards the end of the transfer window. Suter is out. He's been a regular for them. That's them down to Balogun, Proper and Sterling as three trusted central defenders for a very heavy period of fixtures. So Clement should enjoy this week as much as he can. It might not be much better than this. If they're not a couple of games at half-time against Dundee on Saturday, it might revert back to the way they were 2-3 weeks ago. But they do have incredible emotion swings. They're the greatest and then they're the worst on earth. So we can sit back, enjoy it, get on with our game. I suspect we'll win more points than they do going into the game at Ibrox. We'll take an 11-point lead there on the second, and we'll see how that one tumbles out. But enjoy it while we can, Phil, because and we're also enjoying you while we can. I mean, one last point after that, when he invited the journalists in front of him to start digging, he repeated that phrase.
He did.
I suppose that was possibly lost in translation, just like the previous week when he said Celtic and Spurs are a different financial league. That actually means we're well capable of battering both those teams. It's not laying down excuses. So when he was asking people to dig into the VAR decisions, I'm sure he didn't mean dig in and not to look in. Well, you don't want to look too personal at Alan Muir. All you need to do is Alan Muir, Josh Meekings, Inverness Cali Thistle, Lee Griffiths, and there's all the evidence you'll ever need about Alan Muir. So it's fun in games again. We can sit back and enjoy the panto season. Oh, yes, he is. Oh, no, he isn't. And as long as we look after ourselves, give Dundee United a beating on Sunday, we'll keep motoring along, and the madness is all across the city.
100%. Well, speaking of the madness across the city, now you've mentioned their financial situation, right? So in the instance that they can't afford painters and decorators, if those slogans are still up there by the time we roll out of town in January 2nd, do you think the chairman will bring a tin of paint room and do it yourself?
No.
You don't see Peter up on the ladder. Couldn't get rid of that shit. Can even they survive the utter humiliation of leaving that shit painted on the wall?
I don't know, and I alluded to it today in my article from today. It was, you know, Keith Jackson has finally changed the narrative, or changed his opinion to suit the narrative. As he is wont to do, he has done this today. He's basically stated that it's a spurious claim. Why is it only now he's stating it's a spurious claim? Why is it only 12 years into the existence of the new club that he is stating that their claim is spurious? He's like a jilted lover. He's stating it's spurious because he's angry. He's angry that they've let him down. Yep. And that they've fallen behind in the trophy count, and it's really upset him that they have. But if they keep that up, was Boyd whittering on about it the other day as well, that they are still legitimately in the lead?
It was a video clip from May, just as we were about to win the league at Kilmarnock. They played Dundee the night before, and Boyd was rabbiting on about this club was all about winning championships. Sutton just forget it, pal. Boyd came back with, we still win the most, and Sutton's reply was, this time next year, well, we are going for 55, and I suspect you'll be starting next season going for 56. And I don't know how they cover up and hide it. Saying that out loud, they'll probably do an overall redecoration of the place. It won't just be painting over that. They'll maybe bring in some paintings of legends, the Lee McCullochs, the Lee Wallace, Ian Black, Kevin Kyle, all these guys. Give these guys their due, because they've had a good decade or so.
They deserve it.
So, and all over decor, and those items will just be quietly nudged aside, and like billionaires from Motherwell will be told to forget all about it. It never really happened.
Yeah, exactly. It never really. And it was funny because Keith Jackson alluded to the Bellshill billionaire today, you know, in his article as well, trying to make a humorous joke about it. I mean, he really can't afford to be doing that after what he did, what he wrote about that guy. But yeah, I mean, it is. It's just they have to take it down. They just can't leave it up.
The consequences on this one and the implications of this one haven't even properly started yet. And I mean, I don't even think for most fans it's sunk in yet what the implications of this are going to be. And I think we're going to see a lot of that unfolding over the next couple of weeks and months. But it's hard to underestimate how big a day it was on Sunday and how big this achievement is and how consequential it's going to be in the future. But we have a campaign to continue. That's one trophy in the bag. The treble's now on. First things first. How confident are you that we're going to get there, Joe?
Fairly confident. We've got Kilmarnock at home in the fourth round of the Scottish Cup. I'd be shocked if we didn't.
Not worried
win
about Derek McInnes.
Will Derek McInnes be in charge of Kilmarnock? Or will he be welcoming Fraserburgh to Ibrox for his first Scottish Cup tie as manager? So we've got Kilmarnock. There'll be two more games before that, and then it'll be the semi-finals. So we get past Kilmarnock, we're getting fairly close to it. And when Brendan gets to Hampden, he's had a few squeaky bums this year, the Aberdeen semi-final and Sunday, of course. But when Brendan gets to Hampden, he tends to get things done. So yeah. We look, I don't, if you beat Celtic, you'll probably win the Scottish Cup. That's the reality of it. We are in a good position in the league. It's not done and dusted, but I was expecting we'll still have 11 points lead at least on the 3rd of January, and that'll put us in a good position. And the other thing side of that is we can then give some serious thought to what's needed against Young Boys of Bern and then Aston Villa. And at the same time, there should be some transfer work going on. It used to be said what the Champions League playoff round, if the qualifiers, you'd reach the playoff and that was worth about 5 million. Well, if we reach these round of 16 playoffs, it's worth about £9 million from UEFA. There's probably about £3 million in gate money and various other tricks. So we should be going fairly serious in January in the transfer window. And if it doesn't pay off and we get knocked out in the round of 16, we'll have a good player on board in January that'll be ready for next season's qualifiers. So there's no reason not to do it. We'll trust Brendan to force the issue through. It took them until very late to get the summer business done. Hopefully there's business done in January, and the Scottish Cup is a distinct possibility. We had a hell of an off day on Sunday at Hampden. I wouldn't want to see any more of them. If we'd an off day and Aberdeen or someone had were on form, we could be in trouble. But if you beat Celtic, you'll probably win the Scottish Cup. So that's the way it's sitting just now. But the players, I don't think there wasn't any complacency on Sunday. They were off form, and that scare, or in newspaper terms, a kick up the backside might just be what was needed to remind them that it's got to be 100% every time, A, to get results, and B, to retain your place in the side. So I'm fairly confident that we'll be, I think there's a very good chance we'll be in the Scottish Cup final in May, and we'll see what that involves. But I'll pass over to Eric for some thoughts.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were, in the last two seasons, we were 8 and 7 points ahead of them at this stage, around this stage anyway, you know, and last season we dropped our lead and we clawed it back, and, you know, we got there in the end. The previous season, when Beale took over, we were 8 points ahead, or was it 9 points actually, wasn't it, that we were ahead when Beale took over. So he inherited the gap, as he said, and the gap wasn't his problem. He was never going to overcome it as far as he was concerned. But just one thing there, actually, while I think of it, one more player to add to the Hall of Fame is Bill Elmosny. Yeah, he's definitely one that should be put up in the walls inside Ibrox as well. I when you were naming all those names, I was thinking, who is that guy now that lost the plot at Motherwell? But that's him. But yeah, going back to it, look, I think the league is at 11 points. We can only shoot ourselves in the foot there. Even if we did, you know, the worst came to the worst and we did lose at Ibrox, it's down to 8 points. And, you know, I don't see us losing at Ibrox. I genuinely don't. I just think we're too strong for them. I think they threw everything at us in the cup final. And I think they're spent. I genuinely think they're spent after that. They will be absolutely deflated. And I just don't think they'll have the heart for the fight at Ibrox. They'll, you know, they'll give it a go in the first 15 or 20 minutes, but I don't think they'll have the heart to see it through. I think we'll win comfortably there. In terms of the cup, I agree with Joe. Same thing. You know, only if you beat us, you win the final. That's it. You know, you win the cup because you've beaten the best team that's out there at the moment, and that's us. So I don't see it slipping up against Kilmarnock, whether McInnes is there or not. And if, you know, they decide to take McInnes on board after Clement falls on his sword, which he eventually will, I believe, that's another downgrade, you know. That's only, I see them going through I don't see them getting that new manager bounce with McInnes in charge. You know, I see him as I see them as another, you know, it's another project again, like, you know, that he's going to have to be given time and so on and so forth. And I alluded to it today in my article where I spoke about the fact that way back in the dark days in the 90s, we were in this position. We were in a position where we thought that we were never going to close the gap on them. We were never going to catch up on them in terms of, you know, in terms of trophy haul. And also, we never knew what was going on under the hood then. We never had bloggers who could question it. We had a mainstream media who were totally compliant, you know, and totally beholden to them. So we never knew what was really going on behind the scenes there and what they were doing. So, you know, we had to start from rock bottom when Fergus McCann came in, and we are where we are now. And if there's one lesson, which I hope they don't learn, I don't think they're even capable of learning, is if they finally just take that plunge to live within their means and to actually try and build something over there, then maybe in 20 or 30 years, they'll be up with us. But right now, they're not going to do it. They're not going to, like, if they keep eat, sleeping, and repeating what they've been doing for the last 12 years since their inception, they're just going to be the whipping boys for us. And that's the reality. So, yeah. You know, you might as well accept that you've fallen behind in the trophy count. You're now simply the second best. So take that opportunity to actually live within your means and build something at Ibrox. But look, there's nobody over there to take that advice anyway. You know, so unless the new chairman comes in, or the new CEO, should I say, comes in and he really starts wielding the axe and cutting costs here, there, and everywhere till they become sustainable. But it's a long, long road. And we're talking from experience when we say it's a long, long road. I said yesterday in my article that last Sunday evening was 27 years in the making. It was 27 years in the making from the day they won 9 in a row at Tannadice.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
It spanned 3 decades for us to pull ahead of them. And we have done it, and we are there legitimately, and we are there through hard graft and through being well run as a club and being well managed. You know, so if there's any lesson they can learn that one, but I don't see it happening.
I would agree, mate. Right. Our final little item then. We need a twat of the week, guys. Eric, who is it? Who's this week?
It has to be James Tavernier. After his carry-on in the game against Tottenham and his little cameo on the camera when Cyril Dessers was coming on. And then he just couldn't help himself with the disappointed for losing the cup final. If there's one word he has tried so hard to avoid, it's that word. But he couldn't avoid it on Sunday evening after the game. So for me, hands down, I don't know. I can't think of anybody else. He just always manages to put it out of the bag every time. So
what about yourself, Joe? Who do you think?
I'll go for fun guy Chris Boyd. He managed to keep quiet between Sunday night, Monday morning. I was hoping he'd be on Sky Sports News on Monday morning, but he popped up on the Sun's podcast Monday afternoon, and the further he went on, the higher the decibel count. He was getting into very strange places. So they need to demand answers. There's need to be a meeting today at Hampden. Willie Coleman to be there. I think Alan Muir and John Beaton were to be there. Ian Maxwell was to be there. And he'd all to explain this incredible miscarriage of justice.
Yep.
And it was getting deeper and deeper. And it was... trying to think who it was in the Sun. Roger Hanna was doing it. Roger Hanna really should have cut him off for his own good at some point and changed the subject. Yeah. But he let him keep going, and he ventured into the Celtic AGMs. So if Chris Boyd had been to Celtic AGM, there is no one more reluctant to discuss refereeing issues than Michael Nicholson and Peter Lowell. They do not want to know. Ask them anything specific, and they'll generalise and talk about standards, and they're doing this or that. There is no appetite from Celtic to improve standards with referees. But according to Boydie, there seems to be some deep, dark plot inside Celtic Park. Peter Lowell is smoking it. Peter Lowell's maybe feeding me questions to ask at the AGM, and that's creating questions, creating headlines. And what was it, 2021, Bankier said that they've got deep concerns. That basically says, go away, Joe. Stop annoying us. Don't ask us questions about Bobby Madden. And there is no appetite at Celtic to deal with refereeing issues. But in the eyes of Chris Boyd, it's all coming from Celtic Park. They've been stoking the flames. And we're now finding guys like John Beaton that just can't be trusted. If you can't trust John Beaton to look after you, you're in a dark place. But I suspect you've got a few contenders for Twat of the Week, Jim. So we'll give the final word to yourself.
Mate, I'm going to agree with you wholeheartedly. No one else can possibly win this but Boyd. That was the most spectacular meltdown rant come piece of self-destruction I've seen in a long, long time. It was absolutely spectacular. I was still laughing while I was writing about it today, and I was telling everybody to go and watch it. Anybody who hasn't watched it, I said, don't hesitate, except get comfortable, get cozy, bring your feet up and enjoy it as much as I did, because it was superb, absolutely sublime. I could have watched them all day. Honestly, I could have watched hours of that. It was amazing, absolutely amazing. I need to ask, are you part of the conspiracy? Are you part of the conspiracy? Are you a Peter Lowell plant who goes in the AGM and ask these questions to get dismissed so we can carry on with the charade that we don't actually run everything in Scottish football?
James, I told you not to mention that. That's unfair.
I'm giving stuff away here.
I'm rumbled.
You want to be a secret, sir?
I couldn't tell a lie. I'd need to go to confession before Christmas. So, yes, I am. Boydie, I am indeed a Peter Lowell fan.
I'm
a founder member of the Grand Conspiracy, and that's why there was no penalty awarded for Liam Scales' shirt pulling at Hampden on Sunday. So, yep, fair cop. The game's a bogey. That's it.
I haven't seen the
Village Idiot has called it right. Congratulations, Boydie.
Yeah, I haven't seen Boyd's video yet,
treat yourself, get comfortable and watch it. We'll
have. Yeah, I'm gonna have to. But just before we wind it up, did anybody? I know I touched on Keith Jackson earlier on, but wow, I really enjoyed that one today. Did you guys enjoy it as much as I did? I mean, that was an exercise in self-flagellation. It was just
absolutely,
you know, this guy has resigned himself to the fact that they are done. He's given up. He's thrown the towel in, and it was beautiful to read. I loved it. I loved every bit of it, you know. And there was nothing wrong with what he said. Everything he said was right for once, you know. Yeah. But it was all the hallmarks of a jilted lover who had just, you guys have screwed me over and let me down, and I am not defending you anymore.
Hurtled through the stages of grief in one afternoon, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Finally arrived at acceptance. Bravo, son.
What do you think, John?
A lot of them are going to have to do the same. A lot of them are going to come through that journey in the next few months. I have no doubt. But we will see. Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure hosting this podcast tonight. If you are a viewer and you've enjoyed this, please follow us on YouTube, retweet this everywhere, post it on social media, and you can follow us on Spotify and Apple, I believe. Am I right, Eric?
You're correct, yes. So we'll be back again anyway. I suppose I'll be hosting this time next week, and we'll have a look at the proceedings over the weekend and a few other bits and pieces. So I suppose until then, guys.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Cheers.
Enjoy the rest of the week. Talk to you later.
Bye, guys.